open a work session on House Bill 2885. And if our administrator would give us a little tour.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2885 was passed out of the Subcommittee on Education and Innovation, and it directs the Department of Education to award grants to remote and necessary school districts. It establishes a remote and necessary school district fund, appropriates funds continuously to the Department of Education for grants, sunsets on June 30th, 2009, appropriates money from the general fund to the Department for grants, declares an emergency, and is effective July 1st, 2007. You have before you a -3 amendment, hot off the presses this morning, which is near identical to the -2 amendment. Just fixing one technical glitch. Mr. Chair, would you like me to summarize the -3?
Please.
-3 amendment does several key things. One, it deletes the language in the original bill, having interest earned by the fund to be credited to the fund. As we know from previous discussions, something that Ways and Means prefers we not do. It clarifies that the average daily membership is from the prior fiscal year, to be clear. Clarifies that the grants are to be awarded each fiscal year, splitting the money between half in the first fiscal year, half in the second, for a total of $4.4 million in the 2 years. And requires the Legislative Interim Committees on Revenue to conduct a study on the adequacy of funding small schools, including school districts, including examining current additional funding for small and remote schools, what type of school districts are not receiving adequate funding, and the long-term effects, and then report back and consider pre-session filing proposed legislation. This has a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, will we be having testimony on this today?
I think we've had a pretty thorough discussion. We have a couple of committee members that could answer your questions.
Good. Will there be a reliable methodology for differentiating between remote and necessary schools and remote and unnecessary ones?
The unnecessary ones have already been extinguished. They no longer exist.
We know that for sure.
Yes, we've taken care of that earlier.
Good. I'm glad that problem's solved. Thank you.
Any other questions?
No, I mean that is a very good question, actually, and it is one that comes up all the time in these communities as to whether or not there's a community near enough away that would make it worthwhile. And if you look at the list and the number of schools, many of those school districts have, in fact, over the years gone away. And these are places that are very, very far away from each other. We do still have one boarding school in the state of Oregon because of a school district that they figured it was the only way out in some of those remote areas.
Is that Diamond?
It's out that area.
Yeah. I did visit the Diamond School, which has, I think, 12 kids in the K through...
That doesn't sound like the right name.
That doesn't sound right.
No, but those kids have to go somewhere else where they board.
Okay.
When they finish the sixth grade.
That's the one. That is the one. The one that they go on board at is the one. Yes. And because of weather and all of that.
Necessary.
Yeah. because of all the other kinds of issues. And I think, all of us would say that there are some small schools in our districts that we have closed, at least in places like ours where we have declining enrollment, that those communities would have felt were necessary. They are the centers of many of those communities. They are the center and the linchpin. But you look at some of these schools, whether it's, what are some of the ones that are out in your school?
Paisley. Long Creek, Mitchell. In fact, I have a list of them here. Davio, Fossil, Hepner, Huntington, Jordan Valley, Long Creek, Mitchell, Monument, Paisley, Spray, and Ucala. And what Representative Roblin is saying is distance makes, because there's no adjacent school district that through logistics can be used as a consolidation partner, the term remote also necessary for that sort of reason.
And these are districts, let alone not even schools.
These are districts. These are the one room schoolhouse kinds of districts that we're talking about, or a couple rooms. We're talking 100 some kids K.
110 kids K 12 is the cutoff of the building.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, one clarifying comment I forgot to mention. We do have a revenue impact statement that sort of goes into some of that. It's in your packet underneath the agenda. It's based on the Dash 2 amendment, but talking to Legislative Revenue Office, they said it would not change with the Dash 3 because that was just clarifying about the what year the ADM figures were from. So the revenue impact statement also may help because it discusses the districts and might be of assistance. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, does it happen? Do we have a report to the Ways and Means?
Or yes. Subsequent. It has a report to Ways and Means.
Okay. That's yes.
The other thing I would say on this bill, it was interesting to have, I believe this is the one that Portland Public Schools came and
yes.
supported,
yes.
came to and supported. Superintendent Vicki Phillips actually took some of her board members out to a meeting of the board members of these schools and had a really frank discussion about the needs and so on. And I think it has been, I commend her for doing that because it has started to let people recognize that there are similar problems in both places. The declining enrollment of Portland Public Schools has created amazing problems, very similar to what's happened in some of these rural schools. And the discussions that have begun have been, I think, really positive with respect to education in Oregon. So I've been pleased with that. Finding this money is going to be difficult in Ways and Means, and we all know that.
Does that mean there's a chance you'll keep the small schools where they belong in Portland?
In Portland? I would wish we'd keep those small schools in Portland. I mean, most of the research indicates small schools are good things.
Keeps closing them, no matter how good they are.
The similarities that were struck, opposite economy of scale, but how to deal with shrinking enrollment, those sorts of things. I might say that the relationship really started on the House floor last session with Representative Roblin and I talking about schools and these during testimony we heard that these are the canary in the coal mine. And what they really want you to do is take a look at them and see if they deserve to be funded, if they deserve to exist, because it is their prognosis that they will cease to exist. Some of them in 2 years, some of them in 3 years. I think there's one that considers they might be able to squeeze out a fourth year if they go K-8. But before the flame flickers out, they want to be certain that the legislature takes a look at the process of attrition. And if that's what we anticipate, then that's what we anticipate. But they don't want to go quietly in the night. They want people to know that this is what's happening to them. And these 12, we could have made the cutoff higher, but these 12 definitely share a common characteristic in that their very existence is at stake.
I move the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2885.
Is there any discussion on the Dash 3 amendments? Seeing none, we will include the Dash 3s in House Bill 2885.
Mr. Chair, point of privilege.
You asked if there was discussion. You didn't ask if there were objections. Was there discussion?
There was no discussion. You asked if there were. You didn't ask if there were objections, and then you inserted the Dash 3s. Mm-hmm. My point is that you also need to ask if there's any objections to the.
Pardon me. I'll unring the bell.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, for strict a roll call on the Dash 3 amendments.
I will unring the bell and ask if there's any discussion on the Dash 3s.
Objections.
Or objections. Okay.
Seeing none, we'll now ring the bell.
Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call on the Dash 3 amendments, please.
Could you give us a roll call on the Dash 3 amendments, please?
Representative Sim.
Aye.
Representative Dom.
Aye.
Representative Greenlick.
Aye.
Representative Kump.
Aye.
Representative Crummel.
Aye.
Representative Representative Lynn?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Wisnet?
Excused.
Excused.
I'm wrong. I'm back on the brush. I will now entertain a motion. We'll now entertain a motion on House Bill 2885. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 2885 to the Joint Ways and Means Committee with the due pass as amended recommendation.
Is there any discussion?
Yeah, we were told that's the wrong form.
Oh, okay.
Ramona came down to tell us that
we're supposed to say due pass and
we went to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral.
Sure. That's what I kind of thought too.
It seems so weird to me.
And I will do that. I move House Bill 2885 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and to the subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means.
I believe that's in proper form.
That's completely weird. But we had this discussion before we were done. Ramona was there helping us.
First time I've ever heard
in that. Ramona did come to our economic development.
She watched.
Yes.
Yes, she did. Here she is.
Do we feel like we're caught with our hand in the cookie?
Is there any discussion in regard to the bill?
Mr. Chair. So procedurally, the bill is going to Ways and Means?
Yes.
Procedurally, she explained, it's actually going to the floor. It goes to the speaker's desk, which is why you do it this way. And from the speaker's desk, it's then referred back to Ways and Means.
In the old days, the speaker's desks, literally, the bill went back to the floor and was sorted on the desk and to Ways and Means and then out onto the floor, if I may use that term. I think that might be appropriate. But, so that the appropriate verbiage is, I move
to the floor,
to the glass.
Yeah.
Okay. I hope the bill gets as much consideration as the words going. Any other discussion on the bill? If not, I would entertain a motion.
I did it. I already moved.
The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Dahlem?
Aye.
Representative
Green? Aye.
Representative Crummel?
Aye.
Representative Lynn?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Wisnet?
Aye.
Chair Buckley?
Excuse.
Do we
can we
move this to the consent agenda?
No, you can't.
Goes away from me. I now declare the work session on House Bill 2885 closed.
Okay.
And we will open a work session on 3309, House Bill 3309. And would our administrator explain the bill and the amendments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3309, which was heard in the Subcommittee on Education Innovation yesterday, creates a SWAT team for Oregon's future task force, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. As a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee, we have before you two amendments. The -1 amendment would clarify the Department of Education is the department within the state government that will be providing staff support to the task force. And a brand new -2 amendment after discussion yesterday at the subcommittee that would spell out the acronym SWAT as Schools Will Attract Talent. The amendments are not mutually exclusive. They could both be adopted. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there any discussion on the amendments?
Is this bill going to Ways and Means?
Oh, never mind.
That's not on the amendments.
Good.
So, I wasn't part of the subcommittee that heard this. Can we have a little more information about this?
Because I don't know.
Not just a no, but I want to make sure I understand it correctly before I do. You tell us about
Thank you. And to the chair of the SOA, I was supposed to get my writing or my comments transcribed, but I was in measure 37 until like 9 something once, and then home at midnight eventually after dinner, and I didn't do it. Anyway,
I have not heard that excuse for not doing your homework yet, but that one's a pretty valid one.
It's okay, you don't have to make excuses here.
All right. Earlier in the session, we had the group of talented and gifted folks, parents who were here, and they were talking about different challenges their students face, and they had some requests on different things that might be done in terms of a position at the Department of Education. And then we had some more conversation testimony, and one of the gentlemen talked about mentoring, which is the next bill we'll deal with. And then I just sort of threw out this idea that I had had at one point in the middle of the night several years ago, that why don't we recruit our high academic achievers, you know, folks who are likely going to be recruited by everybody and their mother all over the country, why don't we try and recruit them the way we do basketball stars? And that was sort of the end of my comment. Then the chair, who's absent so he can't defend himself, asked me to have it drawn up into a bill. And this is the bill. And it's the idea that you take the people around Oregon who are involved in either education or the different institutions of higher ed, public, private, oh, there he is, public, private, community colleges, the Oregon Student Assistance, which knows which scholarships are currently available and what their financial aid packages might be like, and you get them together and say, we want you all to help figure out how to create incentives that people would stay in Oregon after graduating, or if they leave to go to a school that for whatever reason meets their needs, it's more prestigious, it's, you know, whatever, that they come back to Oregon, because often the next Bill Gates could come out of that pool, and it's unfortunate when they start their companies in other states because they went out of state to work or go to school and don't come back. So this was the idea for the SWAT team for Oregon's futures, to get the people who know about the resources. Some of these people are certainly going to be recruiting these students anyway, because they're from you know, an independent college or the chancellor's office, and they've got the admissions departments eyeballing who the 1,500 plus SAT earners are around Oregon to try and recruit them. And let's get these people to think about why there's a brain drain and why they keep leaving the state, and figure out packages and ideas so to work on it, because it is a real problem. And the talented and gifted parents have talked about how if they make it through high school, and often they don't because they drop out and they're bored and they're not challenged, that often they will leave the state to go to Harvard and Yale and everywhere else. And this is a way to try and get them to come back if they want to do that or not go, because we figure out a way to keep them here. That's the best I got.
That was quite complete. Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenock.
Ordinarily, I try hard not to make really stupid comments, but I think I'm about to make one now.
Another apology.
I give the apology in advance. It talks about making the reports to the interim committee, the interim education committees, and there is talk about not having interim committees, but having the session committees continue between July 1st and February 1st. It can't possibly make a difference here, can it? I mean, people can figure out where the report's supposed to go without getting into that issue.
That's not a stupid question. That's very valid, since this is a new kind of era we're entering into with not having interim committees. And Mr. Wilson, I think we've discussed this at all.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Greenleaf, it's a good question. I do note that we have passed out some bills, or there are other bills out there with similar language, so it may be a system-wide issue.
Certainly figure out where to deliver a report. But it is something we ought to ask the drafters about, although the decision hasn't been made one way or the other, I think.
Representative, you are more experienced than I am. Once we sign a die at the end of June, that will be signing die. We'll not February session be
that's
a special
true.
Session.
We'll have to call ourselves back in. So they will, even if they're the same committees, we'll have to be designated as interim committees. See, it was a stupid comment.
Take it back. any further discussion?
Representative Dahl?
We'll for motion.
I'm ready for a motion on the amendment. If there's...
We got it.
Mr. Wilson? We're going to come to your additional question?
Well, I guess I'm trying to. I mean, I can tell you, I'm not sure we need a task force to identify why people are leaving the state. One reason why they leave the state is because they don't get accepted into a college or a university here. And I'm not talking about students that come out of high school with 2.2 GPAs. I'm talking about students that come out of high school with 3.95s. Another reason is that when they attempt to maybe talk to one or two of the independent colleges, they were basically shown the door because they weren't from the East Coast. So, if you know, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out why some of these kids leave the state to go somewhere else to go to college. The other thing is that isn't this something that the Department of Education can do anyway? They don't. Why do we need to fund and have the expense of a task force that when the State Department of Education, this is probably information that they could track. I guess, you know, I know I'm being a tight ass here.
No, you're not.
I think
that's an excellent.
I just,
if I may, Representative Cole, what we're looking at is a cadre of recognized educational leaders in the state pursuing academic excellence. And what these people would do is in the living room, visit with mom and dad, and talk about the advantage of staying in Oregon. There is no expense involved because what we're doing is asking, and perhaps the chancellor of higher ed, perhaps the university president, the dean of a department they might be interested in. It's simply recruiting scholars like we recruit athletes. So the task force, we could call it anything. We could call it the academic coaches, if you would. That's the intent of the bill. I wouldn't be opposed to putting some money into this. I think that we should court our scholars. We should make a big deal of them. Some leave that may not. But we simply put our arm around their shoulder and said, would you consider Western Oregon? Would you consider Eastern Oregon? And that's the intent. It's not designed to find the reason why. It's just to ask them to stay in Oregon and give it a try.
Thank you, Representative Walmer. Sinclair, you want to respond to?
I was just going to mention one of the things in the bill, line 20, it talks about if we know why, we still can do better by them by identifying financial aid packages, special honors programs, recruitment packages. So there is some knowledge that sits with the Student Assistance Commission, for example, that the Department of Ed isn't going to have in terms of what the 263 private scholarships that are out there. And they can say, look, we've got these, you know, 200 kids. This group could say, we got these 200 kids. We know they're on the edge of leaving, or some have left, and we want them to come back at some point. OSAC brings to the table, well, you know, there's a scholarship for children of veterans, and that would be one that this person could get. And the independent colleges say, you know, if they came to Willamette, they could use that, plus we've got this thing that we want to do. And in the end, these folks think about that target audience and figure out how in an inner, you know, non-competitive way, try and get them to stay. And that's why I think you kind of have to have a lot of these different people at the table, because maybe the best need for one of them is going to be a community college, because they've said, you know, well, maybe this group comes up with the idea that there's a, you know, survey we send. What are you thinking about for college? And they find out, well, my family's here, and I need to work and still help. I can't go even down to Southern. I'd like to, but I can't. I want to do theater. I can't. Well, maybe, you know, here in Salem, maybe Chemeketa, the community colleges say, well, let's get them there for 2 years so they can keep working, keep helping the family, then we move them down. And there's just different players who know sort of the mix that we're trying to think about in the task force. And I just don't know that the Department of Ed's going to know kind of what's at each of these different places' portfolio. And I thought, since they're all on state payroll for free anyway, I'd like to get them together and work on this. Well, not for free, but you know, we don't have to pay them anymore to go to one of these meetings.
I do need to comment, though, that I couldn't possibly agree more. But the way they recruit the top athletes is by offering a full ride.
Right.
I would hope they would develop the notion that the top 10 Oregon college graduates any high school graduates ought to be offered a full ride in Oregon.
In fact, this concept.
Representative Roman does wish to talk. He's been waiting patiently.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, as a high school principal, the state of Alaska a few years ago, and I don't know if it's still there, recruited all over the nation, including Oregon students, and said any student with a 1600 on SAT, we will pay a full ride to any Alaska college. We will pay 1500 and something, those 1500, these kids you're talking about, we will give them, if they come to Alaska, almost a full ride. The state of Florida says we will give full ride to any Florida student that has these kinds of scores. So there are states that are doing exactly what Mr. Representative Greenlick is talking about. And I'm one of those people that says, once we have this kind of commission set up, these people out there talking, they're going to start hearing what the offers are being given to them from other places. And if Oregon wants to be in the market of keeping these people around, they're going to get in that. Texas has done some really interesting things. We have found a number of states in the Midwest, large colleges, giving packages that make our Oregon in-state tuition seem very, very high. So if we are not going to work on having a brain drain go out of the state, I think the people who are involved in education in the state need to get out there and find out from these kids what the offers are coming to them so that we can be competitive with this. Because I do believe that when kids go in other places, you know, my son's an attorney. He went to Syracuse at first and realized he really wanted to be a West Coast attorney. He came back to Lewis and Clark to finish out because you make connections when you're at schools. And you tend to stay where you get your advanced degrees. And it goes right back to what Representative Greenlick is trying to do with getting a top nationally ranked college in our state. Having some of those things, I think when you talk to these really outstanding students, I hope these people will listen to them clearly because there's a lot of things out there that are being offered to them in other places.
Yeah. And so anybody that gets 1600 on the SAT is too smart to go to Fairbanks all winter.
Thank you very much. My comment is I'm not opposed to the idea that the high school graduate going out of the state necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And when they graduate from the colleges, then it's good to bring them back here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what are we trying to accomplish with this one, trying to keep our student in here and graduate here and work here, and then sometimes going out and learn great things, even other states out of country, and come back and do good things. I think that's most important.
That's very good. Representative Donovan, Representative Klemp.
I might say that I would like to take Representative Klemp's idea a step further. In other states, in Montana, the superintendent of public instruction came to our school. I gave a tuition and fees forgiveness scholarship, valedictorian, salutatorian, and then discussed with them presidential scholarships and other scholarships that were available. And the ambiance around that conversation, the thrill of being courted, is exactly where I would like to go. It makes our scholars.
But were you the student?
My daughter was. And thank you, Mitch, for the lead-in. I've been waiting to say that for a long time. But it is, that's where I would like to go. And I think this takes us partway there. And we are behind in the field of courting, recruiting, and keeping our own.
I was just going to mention, it's an excellent point. Representative Cannon actually talked about that. He's a Rhodes Scholar, so he left and I think enjoyed the experience. And we do say in line B, identify resources to motivate top Oregon high school graduates who have left the state to attend college. So it's to say, you know, maybe loan forgiveness, whatever options. But if we know we've got a Rhodes Scholar from Oregon, I'd like to have someone staying in touch with them. What are you going to do when you finish? You're going to come back and run for office and be the youngest legislator in Oregon, which is what he is. And the other thing that I mentioned yesterday, just from my fiscally conservative friend over here, other states have seen throw hundreds of millions of dollars of financial aid at a scholarship program, and they often don't target it on need. And one of the reasons they say that is, well, we're going to get those 1,500 plus SAT earners though if we do that. And in Georgia, that was true, but I think there's probably cheaper ways with the ambiance and a package to get those 200 people than throw several hundred million dollars at an aid program. We're doing the shared responsibility model here, which is really a smart way to do it, leveraging all the resources. I figured this was maybe, you know, when I was thinking about it a few years ago, I was thinking it was a good way to court someone on an individual basis and not create a giant way just to attract, you know, a couple hundred people.
I have a couple of questions with the points that Representative Roebeling brought up. Then shouldn't we be emulating or looking at what other states are already doing, as opposed to what this task force is being tasked to do? Or shouldn't that be an additional task? And my other question is this bill, does it have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means?
Yeah. I can answer both those questions for you, Representative, with Representative Clem's approval. In Section 1, Subsection 2, the purpose of the task force is to identify methods to persuade Oregon's brightest high school graduates to attend college, live and work in Oregon. I would feel that that does cover the exploration of what other states' methods are. And second question, yes, this does have a subsequent referral. Further discussion? Seeing none, I entertain motion on
Mr. Chair, I move that the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3309.
Representative Dahl has moved Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3309. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Someone yet? Representative Dahl.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendment to House Bill 3309.
Representative Dahl has moved the Dash 2 amendment to House Bill 3309. Any discussion?
Yes, the direction to the amendment carrier was to get the word SWAT out. Can't be done. It's in the title. So we had to do the next thing.
Thank you very much for the explanation. Any further discussion?
Okay.
Any objection? So amended. Representative Dahl?
I move House Bill 3309 with a due pass as amended recommendation to the House floor with a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means Committee by prior reference.
Representative Dahl moves House Bill 3309 with a due pass as amended recommendation to the House floor with a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Cromwell.
I don't really want to be like a wet blanket here, but I'm not going to vote in favor of the bill. I think that this is something that the Department of Education could undertake if they would do so. I don't think we need to be putting the resources into this. I do agree that there are things that that we can be doing as a state, and I also agree that I would love to see scholarship resources towards students that are academically inclined and that sort of thing. And I think there are some. There's the presidential scholarship at Oregon, for example, and that sort of thing. And maybe the key is that there's not enough. But I don't think that this is something that we need to really direct or create a new task force to do. And quite frankly, hearing our comments, maybe the Department of Education would take it upon themselves to do. Although maybe they won't. But I guess I don't see the need.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Hearing none, who are the clerk call the roll?
Representative Sun.
Aye.
Representative Dahlen.
Aye.
Representative Greenlake.
Aye.
Representative Kopp.
Aye.
Representative Kimmel.
No.
Representative Lim.
Aye.
Representative Roebeling.
Aye.
Representative Wisnett.
Aye.
Chair Buckley.
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Flynn, would you be so kind as to take this on the floor for us?
I think we should send the carrier down the Ways and Means.
Can you take us down the Ways and Means Court?
I'll just carry it physically.
Okay.
break, and I close the work session on House Bill 3309 and open the work session on House Bill 3310. And Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3310, which was heard yesterday in the Subcommittee on Education Innovation and sent to the floor, allows the Department of Education to establish the Mentoring Oregon's Talented and Gifted program, but acronym is MOTAG, to provide mentoring and resources to help talented and gifted students access education and training beyond high school, establishes Mentoring Oregon and Oregon's Talented and Gifted Program Fund, continuously appropriates monies in the fund to the Department of Education for the program, declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2007. Before you, members, underneath the agenda is the -1 amendment, which deletes language placing appropriated funds in the MOTAG fund, but will continue to allow money from donations and grants to be placed in the fund. As we discussed before, Ways and Means does not like that when appropriated money goes to special funds. It does have a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and follow-up to Representative Wisnett's question on the subcommittee. I misspoke. I actually had forgotten that I had previously checked with Ways and Means. Even with the amendment to take this out, they want it to go to Ways and Means. My understanding is because it's a new program. But I didn't go into more detail with them. But I did ask and was told no. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
This is on. Thank you, Mr. Wilson. He's very honest, of course. Representative Clinton, would you like to brief the rest of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you see, I like acronyms. Sometimes they're a little militaristic and not so popular. Other times they're better. So this came out of that same hearing. And we had, in fact, it turned out to be one of my constituents come forward and talk about how he's been doing this mentoring with Talented and Gifted, and then maybe we could have a lot of people like him who are retired and have some time, or volunteered, have some time, and they could get in and spend some time to try and help the fact that these kids aren't getting enough attention and they're bored and not challenged. So we thought, well, and I think we talked about it a little bit that day, and since then, when Aspire was here, we talked about maybe we take the Aspire model, where there's a person in the school who coordinates, grassroots organizer kind of, coordinates all these volunteers to come in and help. Aspire's been up and running now for almost 10 years. It was all done through foundations and private donations and willing people. That was sort of the thought for how we get this going, is if there really are some motivated people out there and we provide a framework, then they can raise some money and get some volunteers in. I think we actually, I think I got a promise on the record that Aspire would help with some of the program ideas and the way they set it up for training and other things to set it up if we could get it going.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions to Representative Klim?
Representative Klim. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I notice that in Section 2 on Line 7, it says the Department of Education may establish the MOTAG program. I'm wondering, has the Department indicated that they would, in fact, do this?
It's an excellent question. I have no memory of testimony on that.
I don't either, and I, Mr. Chair, we had talked, he said get it drafted up, and I didn't do any homework to ask anybody, and I saw Mr. Reeder here, who was one of my constituents, and I thought, oh boy, I didn't ask anybody over there about either of these two bills, and he stepped out, so I don't really know.
He ran out.
Yeah.
Mr. Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Klein, Representative Klein might be able to shed a little bit of light. I've discussed this some with Department of Education, and I believe, again, it'll depend on how Ways and Means handles these. They're just still working on fiscal information for some of these, and when that's final, my sense is that if they determine they do need an appropriation to do that, they would be more interested in doing the program, and if they got the money. That's my sense from talking to them. I know that the representative was going to be here as in another committee meeting, I believe. He's going to try to come later to the committee.
Andrew's here.
Oh, and there is, I'm sorry, another person from the Department of Ed, yeah. Andrew Morgan.
Okay, would you like to come up and give anything to say about this?
I don't know what to
add. Just come up and state your name.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
just to administer?
For the record, I'm Andrea Morgan. I'm an education specialist with the Department of Education with responsibilities for talented and gifted education.
Thank you, Andrea, for being here. Do you have any, does the department have any point of view on this bill in terms of...
I don't know that we've really come up. I think we're neutral on the bill. One of the concerns that we have is that right now the TAG specialist is a 0.3 FTE position, and adding any additional work to that 0.3 is a challenge with the work that's already being accomplished. But other than that...
So if I can maybe summarize then, if the budget does hold the funding for a full-time position, it would be more likely that something like this could be implemented.
Absolutely.
Mr. Chair, I think the point is then it should say shall and then go to Ways and Means. So if it says shall when it goes to Ways and Means, they give the money. It's going to happen. If it says shall and goes to Ways and Means, they don't give the money, bill dies. And that's probably more appropriate than may. It goes there, they get the money, and then you don't know if it's going to actually happen, which is a good catch.
I think the next question is the department's neutral on the bill, but if we really want to find out how the department feels about it, what's the fiscal? Have you guys worked up a fiscal on it yet?
I know it's being worked up. I'm not sure if it's been completed yet.
Well,
I'm sorry, but...
Follow-up question, Mr. Chair. This is a legislative idea and not a department idea?
That's correct, Representative.
I'm going to predict that the fiscal will be extremely high because if they didn't think of it, they may not like it. I know it sounds a little bit gilded, but my experience has been with most agencies that if they like an idea, then their fiscal tends to be pretty low. If they don't like an idea, then they have a fiscal high enough to drive it through the roof. And in essence kill it. I would suggest that that if you really want this to happen, that may be changed to a shall. And if the may isn't changed to a shall, I mean, I'll support the bill. Mm-hmm. I like the idea, but if we really want to get some attention for talented and gifted students, that may isn't going to work because the department may decide that they want to do it, or they may decide that they don't want to do it. But if we are very directive about it, then it changes the scope of things. And it's, as Representative Klein was pointing out, then it happens.
Thank you, Representative Cromwell. So, do you care to add your thoughts?
Excuse me, Chair Buckley and Representative Cromwell. I had a meeting with the Senate Education Chair that ran late, so I apologize. And so the question is what were our estimates of fiscal impact for 3309 and 3310? I have the estimates of fiscal impact, and I will note that it's not, that these are our estimates that we submit to the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Legislative Fiscal Office.
Identify yourself.
Oh, excuse me, Morgan Allen, Legislative Director, Department of Education. For the 3309
We're just
force.
On work section 3310.
Oh, excuse
right
me.
Now.
3310. Let's see here. For House Bill 3310, our estimate of financial impact is that it would take half an FTE for education specialist and 0.25 FTE for office of sports specialist to implement and run, then develop and run the program. So 0.75 FTE. And I'm looking here at the... So 0.75 FTE for estimate for 0709 biennium, $132,000. And I would remind the committee that currently right now Ms. Morgan is our only TAG staffer. There are bills making their way through the process that would add more TAG staff to our department, but we currently have 0.3 FTE working on TAG programs, and this is an entirely new mandate that the department is being asked to do. So that's our estimates that we have submitted to the Legislative Fiscal Office.
$132,000?
Yeah, that's correct.
In my recollection at OSAC, we had about a full-time person initially getting started as they, you know, and then they got a grant, and then they could hire a regional person, and I think that's about right. And I would favor shall, knowing it has to go to Ways and Means and get that funding so they can do it. Otherwise, it definitely needs to be may if it weren't going to go to Ways and Means, because, you know, it's not appropriate, obviously, on 0.3. I mean, having heard what you just said, but...
Mr. Chair, let me say
We're talking about changing the one word that can be done as a conceptual amendment, right?
If you want to circle the wrath of the chief clerk's office or legislative council, go ahead. But
if the clerk came to our chair's meeting and said it was perfectly appropriate to have a one word or one number conceptual amendment. Mr.
Olson? I'll defer to those to your judgment, but I would say that the may versus shall also may have an impact on fiscal and revenue, and so that since we do have multiple education meetings next week, we could do an amendment. We could carry this over for a work session to Monday for that matter, if we want to. But I'll defer to your judgment, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair,
I'd ask.
Let me go to the representative first.
Yes.
Point of clarification.
To me, personally, I think the name might be better. The reason why, when we change it to shall, in case ways and means, if they don't fund it, then shall they have to fund it from the Department of Education without giving a proper funding. Then they are stuck with this bill. May is more flexible. It's as long as they got money, they are going to do it. But if not, then they don't have to do it. So shall is a very strong language. What happened if, whatever reason, KD-12 hired many others, if they don't have enough money, don't give any money, then what happened when you put the shall there? And who is going to pay for, how do they want to pay for?
Okay, so if I understand you correctly, then your concern is if it is a mandate, then the department will have to find the funds within their budget to do so.
Exactly, that's what it means, shall.
This total process question, because it's going to ways and means with a fiscal, it's a given that it's not going to get out of there without funding, because there'll be a fiscal and they'll have to meet the fiscal, or no?
The subcommittee on ways and on education for ways and means could potentially instruct the department that they're going to have to cover the cost of this out of existing resources.
That's true.
And if that were the case, then it would be up to the department to figure out where they're going to find that $132,000 for the other 0.75 FTE. Or they could try to squeeze this into everything else that the tag person is doing, which, as has been alluded to here, would probably be a stretch. But I think that if we want to see the idea and tag really rise to the level that it should, Then instructing the department to do it is what needs to be done. Now, if the department objected and the Ways and Means Committee agreed with them, then they could agree not to fund it and not to move the bill, and then it would sit there in Ways and Means and die. So those are the possibilities. But there have been times in the past where there have been programs that have been mandated onto various departments, and the department has basically been told to cut to cover it under existing resources. And they, you know, sometimes are pretty inventive and come up with it, and because they take it very seriously. The departments, I'm not trying to put the departments down, but they do take it very seriously, and when they're instructed to do something, and so they try to figure out how they're going to do it and do it.
Pretty much the same thing. I was just going to say, when you put a shall in and it gets passed, they shall do it, and that means whether you give them extra money to do it or not, they've got the money. Do they have more than $132,000? Yeah. Therefore, it's there, so they don't have to give them any more to do it. And a may indicate that it goes there, and they can pass it through Ways and Means without putting any more money to it, and then it gives the discretion, which is what Representative Lum was saying, to the department. And the other part about that is it still stays there. I mean, it is the law that they may do it. So any future deal can be discussed about and put again. So that's the question about the may and shall.
Representative Lum, do you have a comment?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I thought -1 took appropriations out of the
bill. Yeah, that's correct. That's an interesting point.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I think all it does is it takes it from going into the specific fund. So money can still be appropriated to it. It just would not go into a separate fund that would gather interest that would stay with the program. So that if it were to attract donations or grants, you could put it in the special fund to attract interest.
Thank you.
And thank you. There's no problem.
And that is the other thing that this bill does, even with the maze. It does set up a separate fund that people can donate to specifically for this in the future, which we don't currently have.
Mm-hmm.
So even with the maze language, it does institutionalize that new fund that people can donate to. And if that number got to a big enough fund, then they could use that. But they could only use it for this.
And that's how Spire got started.
That's exactly right.
Going through this with me.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for the clarifications. Very interesting. Thank you, Representative Lynn, for bringing up that point. I would entertain a motion on the dash one. Representative Kopp, would you be so kind?
Yes. Chair Buckley, I move that the dash one amendment to House Bill 3310 be added.
Thank you. Representative Kopp has moved the dash one amendments to House Bill 3310. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Any objection? Hearing none. So amended.
I did this the other way around. I found it worked better.
Is there a copy of that?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3310 with a due pass as amended recommendation to the House floor with a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee by prior reference.
Representative Kopp has moved House Bill 3310 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation as amended with a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means as with prior reference.
Yes.
Oh, boy, that's pretty darn great. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kopp.
I have a question of Mr. Allen.
Sure.
Morgan, when the with that fiscal 132,000 in a position like this, is that a position that you look for, that you would look, for example, for a TAG trained teacher to fill, or is this a position that would be a person that is more along the lines of a educational assistant?
Chair Buckley and Representative Crummell, I believe that if we do have the resources to do this, that we would definitely look for someone with some sort of TAG experience, whether they're a teacher or a counselor type, or preferably we try to hire people within the department that have expertise in those areas, and maybe someone with a mentoring background as well too, because that's sort of the intention of the bill. But the technical position that we would be hiring, which sort of gets us to the $132,000, is Education Specialist 2, and we estimate that it would probably take a half of an FTE for the biennium for someone to, because we are creating a new program from scratch, and it's not a huge overwhelming monumental task that would take tons of people, but it is something new, and as you know, we only have 0.3 FTE, and Ms. Morgan here is our TAG person, and although she's only 0.3, she does a lot more than 0.3 with her time, and that's sort of the official breakdown in the budget line item. So but to answer your question directly, yes, we would look for someone with TAG and mentoring experience to fill the position.
Okay, thank you.
Any discussion?
I can see that the case for making the May a shall isn't going to happen. I'll still support the bill, but my preference would be that this be a shall to direct the department to put this program together. I think that, as has been demonstrated in prior testimonies before this committee and the subcommittees, TAG is definitely talented and gifted, is definitely a program that there are more students needing assistance in that arena. We probably need more teachers in that arena, and it quite frankly needs more attention than it is getting currently. What I find very interesting about our system in general is that we spend an enormous amount of resources on the 3% of the population, well, maybe 7% of the population, that is dysfunctional, criminal, and other adjectives are the adjectives I probably shouldn't go into, and we won't spend squat for students that, you know, go into school, work their butts off, are trying to succeed, are smart as a whip, and we can't manage to come up with the resources to give them the challenges that they need to move their educational careers forward. It just boggles my mind.
Well said, Representative. Any other discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative
Clem? Aye. Representative Dahl? Aye. Representative Greenlight? Aye. Representative Crummell?
Aye.
Representative Crummell?
Aye.
Representative Lim?
Aye.
Representative Groblin?
Aye.
Representative Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair Buckley? Aye. Motion carries. I close the work session on House Bill 3310. And open the work session on... Which one do we have here? House Bill 3178.
Mr. Chair, before the Department of Education folks leave, I just want to apologize for not doing any legwork or homework at all, and thank Mr. Olson for doing some of that conversation. I forgot actually.
Thank you very much for your time. Both of you, appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Olson. And Mr. Olson, if you tell us about this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3178 directs school districts, education service districts, and public bodies to make available to the public lists of vacant and unused buildings and portions of buildings that may be suitable for operation of a public charter school. Directs that lists be provided to developing or operating public charter schools within 30 days of written request. There's a -1 amendment that clarifies that on page 2, line 36, it's an approved charter proposal, not just an approved charter. And this bill has no subsequent referral. It was heard in the Subcommittee on Education Innovation and forwarded to the full committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. I can't remember whose names are on the right in front of me. Representative Robo. That's right. Representative Robo.
Yesterday.
That's right.
This is, a relatively simple bill, and when we talked in the full committee, we talked about the fact that there are people who, at their core, believe that charter schools are a positive addition to the landscape of Oregon public education, and there are people who believe that public charter schools, by definition, are not a good idea in Oregon. I mean, there's that extreme in this particular thing. What this bill recognizes is that probably the number one reason that charter schools fail in this country has to do with procurement of facilities, a place to hold their school. And what this bill says is that they should be given a list of appropriate buildings that are public, because these are public charter schools, that would be available in the area that they're going to register their school upon request. And they, too, would have the right to ask for a contract for those buildings. It doesn't say they get it cheaper. It doesn't say that they other things, but it does say that they should have the right to know that that's available, and then the right to try to get it. If the school district was already selling the property, doing something else with it, they'd have the right to bid on it like anybody else, but they don't get any extra for that. From my perspective, and I tend to be one of those people who thinks that there is a positive relationship in our state with charter schools, this bill gives them an opportunity to be successful for the long term, which is finding that facility that they need. And that we should, as a group in education, be working together to try to find out how do we best serve all the kids in Oregon. That's why we introduced it, and if Representative Dahl wants to say something, he can as well.
Well, I would just... Representative Robin and I co-signed the bill, both knowing full well that charter schools are not the answer for every student or every group of students. But for those that they do provide an answer, the number one problem is housing. In districts I've served in, charter schools have moved 3 times in 3 years. And still they manage to function and do a fairly decent job. Anything we could do to help those Oregon students that are involved in that process would be a boon. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Wilson, anything else to say? You were gesturing the sheet there.
Yeah.
Is that?
No, I don't believe so.
I noted in my bill file a letter from the Portland Public School District. Urges a no vote on this, and it's particularly concerned with the sentence on line 34 through 30. 7 on page 2 of the bill. I wasn't at the hearings, and I don't know what happened to this, but their argument is that the charter schools tend to use only a portion of the building, and if they're required to force them to negotiate a lease for that part of the building, it basically takes it off of the market, this ability to lease or sell the whole building because of its use. I wonder if anybody got that letter from...
I don't remember getting a letter.
Well, let me read it. I'm not sure why it...
I believe this was just put in our files yesterday after the hearing, so I really appreciate Representative Greenlee bringing it to everyone's attention, because I, too, was just reading it, because it wasn't... We did not have it yesterday when we were in the hearing.
I still don't have it.
If I might call your attention to the line just above, and I would agree with Portland Public Schools if they were forced into a situation where charter schools were given a number one position or priority. But if you look at line 28 and 29, it says nothing in this subsection requires the owner of a building on the list to sell or lease.
That's being deleted.
That's being deleted. 29 is being deleted.
But I want to look at this again.
Misty Tremaine has a question. It looks to me like these lists, in current statute, these lists are shall make available if the information is reasonably, if it's reasonably available. They shall provide, nothing requires them to sell. And we're saying, no, actually, you need to make them available upon request within 30 days because apparently the if reasonably available wasn't working well. And you're going to enter into good faith negotiations about the property to see if it's doable. So it's a big, I mean, it's quite a change from our current statute. When we used to make lists, and now we're going to make lists quickly and start negotiations in good faith.
And they're only arguing with the very last sentence. I mean, the sentence that's being deleted now says nothing in this subsection requires the owner of a building on the lease to sell or lease to a public charter school or a building or any portion of the building, which is what's got them the most worried.
Right. That's an excellent point.
While that is the case, in terms of 28 and 29 being taken out, there's nothing in here that says that the school district has to actually lease the property or sell the property or let the charter school use it. What it's saying is they have to negotiate in good faith.
That's true.
And it doesn't mean that they'll come to an agreement.
And my feeling would be, and I'll put that on the record, that if this Portland Public Schools or any other school district is planning on selling the whole building, that would be a reason to not lease a portion of that building.
Well, Mr. Chair, I hope we don't act on this thing. Give me a chance to work with Edge Council to see about some language that perhaps does what Representative Rubin's proposal, or does what the district proposes. Well, I'm surely supportive of this if that last sentence is taken out.
I will definitely give you the time to help clarify this. Is there further discussion, Representative Clem?
Yeah, I did have a question, and this is I can do this offline if we need to while he's working on it. It just
this is
part of it is that the school is going to be a public charter school, which would kind of mean the school district has been involved and approved them already. I mean, I guess what I'm wondering about. What is the charter school process?
The amendment inserts the word proposal in. So this could be a charter group that's actually making a proposal to begin a charter school.
Or it could be the school district refused to approve and went to the state for approval and came back.
That is correct. That's currently in statute. The charter school makes the application to the school district. School district has a right to turn it down. Mm-hmm. They go through the process two times, and then it goes to they can appeal to the state board. And as Representative points out, it's possible for the state board to approve, even though the local school district has not approved.
Just one more.
I would also like to see what Representative Greenwood can come back with. It almost seems like, and I agree with what Representative Crummell said, it almost seems like you could actually leave that one line. This is nothing requires the sale because you have both.
Right.
And just for your information, we have a really great charter school here in Salem Howard Street that is tucked in the nook of South Salem High School, off in one wing.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, federally approved originally and then switched to state, and the school district came along and worked, and it's great that it worked out. I know sometimes it doesn't, and that's why we're trying to facilitate more.
Correct.
But they're off in their own little section, but sharing with the high school.
Correct. Since I'm an attorney, I have concern over the words "in good faith." I'm not sure what that means in the law. And I would, if there's any sort of...
In good faith has some pretty clear language in, from a very legal perspective, so they can
know what it is. We will not take action. So we'll adhere to Representative Greenick's request that he be allowed some time to look into this. And I appreciate you doing that, Representative.
Mr. Chair, one more comment.
And I think probably what we'll do is we'll reschedule this another date in the context of the rest of our schedule.
Just wanted to clarify myself. The physical construction works great of the layout. I have no idea about the relationship between the charter school and the school district. I just like, having the empty wing used is what I'm commenting on, not the merits or not of that particular relationship. Is that no clue?
So noted for the record, Representative Quinn. Without any further discussion, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3178. Members, I would request a motion if a member would be willing to make it that the rules be suspended and the chair be allowed to vote on House Bill
2885. Three quarters majority?
No, I'm just kidding.
Is that a majority of voters? That's unanimous.
Mr. Chair, I move we suspend the rules and reopen the work session on House Bill 2885 so that Chair Buckley can vote on the bill. Your vote will not change the outcome of this.
The fine vice chair has moved that we suspend the rules to allow Representative Buckley to open the work session, reopen the session on House Bill 2885, so Representative Buckley may vote. His vote will not change the outcome. Any objection?
I'm going to give a courtesy yes on this one.
As Mitch said earlier, can we have a roll call vote?
I'm going to courtesy no. That's my work, and I don't want to tell you.
Do we really need to
know? No.
Just a moment, folks. Andy, since there's an objection, you guys want to do a roll call of the motion?
No. No. You don't want to do a roll call.
If you would gavel in that it's authorized to accept the suspension and reopen the work session.
The motion carries the work session for House Bill.
And now you need to open it.
Reopened?
Yes.
Representative, aye. Work session House Bill 2885 is closed. Is there anything else, should I ask?
We could have only known that. We could have avoided all of that.
Yes, Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and audience. As was noted yesterday in the subcommittee, beginning next week, the full education committee will meet next week on Monday, Wednesday and Friday. Monday and Wednesday at 1 p.m. in Hearing Room D. Fridays at 1 p.m. in this Hearing Room F. Next week, the Education Innovation Subcommittee will continue to meet on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1 p.m. in Hearing Room D. And the last week of the session, we're still finalizing the schedule, but will likely only be the full Education Committee meetings, potentially multiple days. We're still working on the schedule for that. And so just a reminder, we do have five bills up for a first public hearing and work session on Monday in House Ed, 1 p.m. in Hearing Room D.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Olson. Mr. Olson, I did say the last week of session, and there was a
little bit. I'm sorry.
Just to note, on today's agenda, it said we were in hearing room. Could you make sure it has the right hearing room, because some of us still can't find our way home.
So another representative.
Show me the way to go.
And Mr. Chair, one other clarification. We did not have work sessions today on House Bill 3335, 3179, or 2606, because they're still being worked in the Subcommittee on Education Innovation.
Thank you, Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, and without another encore,
Mr. Chair, I do have a quick question.
Yes.
Since there's decidedly not going to be session next Friday, the 20th, we are still going to have an education committee meeting?
We still are scheduled, Representative, to hear Bill.
I have a feeling I knew the answer to the question, but if you have a health care committee, it's free.
If you can manage it there off, why not take it, right? I appreciate the inquiry. And with that, thank you, members, for your work today. I hope you all have wonderful weekends. We are adjourned.
Eric?
Yes.